Many of the millions of Americans who served in Vietnam during the war spent their last few weeks in country counting the days until they could leave. Over the past few years, thousands of them have returned to Vietnam to visit old battlefields, to remember old friends. In a moment, we'll talk with our friend Mike Davidson, who's just returned from his first trip to Vietnam since the war. If you have questions about what that was like, or if you've made that trip yourself, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Mike Davidson retired from the staff of the Joint Chiefs of Staff a couple of years ago with the rank of Major General. Mike, I'm guessing you were a lieutenant the first time you went to Vietnam.
Absolutely. A very green, young, and eager lieutenant.
And how long were you there, as it turned out?
6 months and one day.
And which unit?
I was in a Ranger company in the 1st Air Cavalry Division. We were doing long-range reconnaissance patrols.
So you were out in what was regarded at the time as the boonies.
Yes, or even beyond the boonies, out in what we called Indian country, well away from any other U.S. forces.
After that experience, as a young man, this had to be remarkably vivid. I mean, you must remember a lot of it.
Certainly I do. It's a pretty intense experience, and it certainly puts all these Washington and Pentagon battles in a different perspective.
And does it help, I wonder, you were a senior officer much later, does it help to remember what it's like to be a lieutenant at the end of a very long telephone line?
Absolutely, and I'm not sure how you could be a senior officer unless you'd had some combat experience in there somewhere, and we've certainly fixed that problem, haven't we?
Well, let's talk about why did you decide to return, and why now? I mean, it's been some years since former GI started going back to Vietnam.
Well, I went back on something of an unusual basis. I went back to do a bike ride from Hanoi to Saigon, and that's a bicycle, not a motorbike. And really hadn't focused on much of the Vietnam stuff. I was looking more for the bike ride, and then found a lot of good Vietnam things while I was there.
You weren't looking for... You were going back to Vietnam. You had to be thinking about what you'd done 30 years.
Well, yeah, and the funny part was I was on the telephone making a reservation, an airline ticket to Hanoi, and I thought, oh, what am I doing? Guys used to get killed trying to fly into Hanoi. But, yeah, certainly I knew where I was going.
The bike ride, was it down the coastal route for the most part?
It was. Then we lost our head and went up into the highlands for a couple of days, which is a 4,500-foot elevation. I know a lot of cyclists listen to NPR. They will appreciate that, even if some of the others won't.
Of course, it's always important to remember the difference between cyclists and bikers in this context.
Absolutely.
Did you return to any of the places you remembered as a young man?
You know, I did. Because if you're going to ride your bike from one end of the country to the other, you're going to go over some familiar ground, and in fact, I did.
What was that like?
It wasn't bad. The people in Vietnam are in a very attractive people, and it's a beautiful country. They're very young. They don't remember the war. Most of them were born well after the war was over. American things are fashionable in Vietnam for some reason, logos and clothes. So it was a very warm reception. They're friendly people.
Could you see the war, the signs of it, the remnants of it?
Oh, yes, of course. Even back from the French war in 52 up to 54, they still have pillboxes. We have more pillboxes. The damage has pretty well been cleaned up, though.
Are there memorials there in Vietnam to what, when you were there, was the other side?
Yeah, and that was a bit of an experience. I will tell you, I wrestled with the issue of whether to visit the My Lai Memorial and ended up doing that. And that was a good experience. It came to me, since I'm still here in Washington and do national security things and still deal with issues like Abu Ghraib, that if my army had done at My Lai what we did, I ought to have the chutzpah to go stand there on the ground where they did it. So I did.
And what was it like? What did you see?
It was an unusual trip. It was going in. It's a disorienting experience because when you're going through past a rice paddy and there's a tree line, you find yourself thinking, well, where am I going to jump when they start shooting, and where am I going to call in fire? So you kind of get in a mindset for that. And the one remarkable thing about the My Lai Memorial, it's not remotely a memorial like we would have a memorial. It's not grand it's more like a strip shopping center, frankly. But they had a path that ran through the village, and they poured concrete on the path. And while the concrete was still wet, they took a jungle boot and made imprints going in all directions. They had bare feet, children's size, going in all directions. And it kind of captured the confusion that must have taken hold during that day. So it was a good experience.
What evoked the strongest memories for you? Was it the sights? Was it the smell? The
sounds? It was the people. It was the people. They haven't changed. They're still very attractive, still very young, still making their way. I'm glad you're doing the show on Vietnamese. They're resilient people. They have a strong culture. It merges well with American culture. Our two countries bonded during that war. We had 2.5 million American men and women serve in Southeast Asia during that war. So there's a enduring connection between our two countries.
Not too long ago, I think there was a news report of the first Vietnamese-American to die in Iraq.
Yeah, and you can't stereotype these things, but I find the Vietnamese a very appealing culture, and they do family things well, they do religious things well. They do well in America, of course.
We're taking calls now from people who may have served and returned to Vietnam. If you've made that trip, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us an email, totn@npr.org. John joins us on the line from Portland, Oregon.
Hello, Neil.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I served in Vietnam as a teenage helicopter pilot. I was there in 1968 and 1969, and I went back last year with my wife and two teenage daughters, and we had just a fabulous time. It was just phenomenal.
Did you have any concerns when you started booking this trip and making arrangements?
No, I had a number of people ask me if I was going back to kind of make peace with myself, and my experience wasn't such that I needed to do that. It was purely to go back to a country that I loved very much when I was there. And we were not at all surprised. It was just the people could not have been nicer. It was absolutely wonderful. We started in Saigon and went all the way up the coast and ended in Hanoi. Hanoi just blew my mind. It's a sophisticated, beautiful city. We spent 2 days in Hue. I couldn't believe Hue. It was just a phenomenal trip. And the people are absolutely wonderful. There was absolutely no remnant whatsoever of ill feeling.
I wonder how did your daughters like it?
They loved it. They loved it. It was great shopping. You hear it's a communist nation. I've never seen so many capitalists in my life. Everybody is selling something. it was a phenomenal trip. I'd recommend it to anyone, whether you've been there or not.
I wonder, you said there was no necessity for you to go back to make your peace with anything, but was one of the people that you may have encountered during your trip yourself as a young man?
No. You asked the general what he was stricken by. I think one of the things that I was stricken by was how quiet it was. When I was there, you could never get away from the sounds of helicopters. They were always in the air, and I never saw one helicopter. So it was kind of interesting from that perspective.
The sound of the Huey, the universal symbol of Vietnam. Yeah,
it certainly was universal.
John,
this is Mike Davidson. Did you get a chance to visit the Imperial City when you were at Hue?
We did, and. You know, you talked about seeing remnants of the war. I was stricken by there's virtually no war damage visible. I think you do see pillboxes and things like that, but the Imperial City was just amazing. I had read a lot about Hue and the assault there in Tet of 68, but I had no idea it was as beautiful as it was. Hue was frankly probably next to Hanoi was my favorite place.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the call, John.
You bet. Thank you. A great program.
Appreciate it. Let's talk now with Lou. And Lou is calling us from Overland Park in Kansas.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Excuse me. I was an Army nurse from October of 69 through October of 70 during the war. And I was stationed at Chu Lai, which was just south of Da Nang. I've been back to Vietnam twice. I was back in November of 94 and then in January of 96. And actually, I had a couple more trips planned that ended up being canceled and would like to get back again. My reason for going back may be a little bit of closure, but just because I was curious. I thought that it was a beautiful country, and I wanted to get back and see what had happened, what had transpired, how it had changed. And I did actually get back to where my hospital had been, but there's nothing there. It's all gone.
That must seem remarkable, a place that I'm sure you can remember every step and turn of in your imagination, and all gone.
Yes, and I, fortunately, since all of us tend to lose a little of that thought process as we age, I took lots of slides while I was there, and I actually now speak to students all the way from about fifth grade on through college level about my year there. And so I have these actual visual aids to keep my memory very fresh. And what I do now when I speak is there is a slide. I went up in a Loach one day, which is a little helicopter, and took some overhead shots of the hospital, and I show that as part of my presentation. And at the very end, I show a slide taken on down the road from Chulai on the beach, looking up and saying, can you see the similarities in the terrain? But that's where the hospital was. There's nothing there now.
Just the terrain.
Just the terrain. But the people were very warm. I found the same thing. You can, at least in 96 and 94, you could buy almost anything you wanted for one U.S. dollar. And I did get up to North Vietnam and those areas where, fortunately, I didn't get during the war. The one really interesting thing about the northern area of Vietnam now is in 94 when I went back, they were in the process of demolition of the Hanoi Hilton. And when I went back a year and a half later, it was gone. So I was kind of felt fortunate I had a chance to peek in and see the cells in there in 94 before they were gone.
Did you get a chance to visit the hospital tunnel complex at Chulai?
I did. As a matter of fact, that was a vivid memory of my working there, as we would occasionally get patients from the tunnel hospitals. And
these were tunnel hospitals run by the Viet Cong?
Underground, yes. And if anybody goes, I've said this many times, you need to visit either in Kuchi or in Chulai somewhere, the tunnel system, because it makes you appreciate that we were fighting an enemy that could live underground for months on end, and there was probably not much chance from that fact alone that we were going to win that war. They knew what was going on, and we didn't even know they were there. It's a real learning experience.
Lou, thanks very much for calling.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're talking about returns to Vietnam. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. John. John's calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hello, gentlemen. My name is John, and I've been a student of military history, so I know a little bit about the battles and whatnot that were fought in Vietnam. But I've got a question for the general concerning his feelings about maybe who actually won the war. And the reason I say this is the general mentioned that, you know, American logos and products are all the rage in Vietnam. The other day I saw in the news about a Vietnamese software company that is actually selling services. I think it was to IBM or some big American company. So I kind of see maybe some openings for some democracy in the future of Vietnam. So despite the fact maybe the war was lost, do you see in the long run that maybe there's some irony that things like democracy can actually come to the Vietnamese people?
Enormous amounts of irony. I kept asking the Vietnamese I was with, and believe me, when you're on a bicycle traveling that many miles, you spend all of your time out with the Vietnamese people. I asked them what they thought about the communists and how it was going. Every village, no matter how small, has one nice building, and that's the communist headquarters. And the local people take it as a joke that they have to have the building for the communists, and then there's the other life that they all live. Those people don't know or care whether their government is communist or what have you. So I think you raise a good point. That the Vietnamese people will ultimately win by their own talents and initiative, regardless of what we or anybody else does.
John?
I agree. And I think that, you know, I have a lot of Vietnamese-American friends, and I've always had the highest regard for them. They're very smart. They work very hard. They believe in the American ideal. And, by the way, I think it's really great that some of our former warriors can actually travel back to a country, you know, where they were involved in a conflict and participate in positive things. And I'm not too sure, you know, warriors from other countries would do that.
John, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's see if we get one more caller in. And this is Bob. Bob's with us from Haley, Idaho.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Bob from Haley, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
I went in 95. I rode my bicycle through Vietnam for 30 days, starting from Hanoi down all the way down into South Vietnam.
And have your legs stopped hurting yet?
It was pretty leisurely ride, actually. That wasn't the important part of it, but it was a fascinating trip, and it's a beautiful country. And I hadn't gone back there with the intention of trying to find any sort of resolution, but I did have one incident that brought a lot of resolution to my experience that was pretty meaningful, and that was that. And I was having a lunch at a village in North Vietnam, and one of the guys who was the brother of the person who had invited us for lunch showed up, and he had actually been at the same place in Tay Ninh province that I had been at the same time that I had been there, only he was either Viet Cong or North Vietnamese regular, I'm not sure. And when we both realized that in our conversation, which was limited at best just because I don't speak Vietnamese, but when we realized that, it was clearly a significant, meaningful event for him, too, in that we both had tears in our eyes and recognized that here was a former enemy that we were sitting face-to-face having lunch together. And it was a very meaningful experience.
Bob, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you.
And General Davidson, Mike, it's always good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me back, Neil.
Mike Davidson, Major General, retired U.S. Army, was with us here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.